Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Text 14.
Parishvant indriyatmaham Twit parito bubukshitaha Snadva pitva radinadya Upasvishto katashramaha Parishvantindriyatmaham Tritparito bubukshitaha Snatva pitva radinadya Upasprishto gatashramaha.
Please chant.
Parishvantatmayatmaham Tvitpari tatpubukshitaha Snatva pitvarade nadyat Upasprishto gatashramaha. Snatva pitvavadi nadya Upasprishto gatashramaha Vishvatma indriyatma Vitarita bubukshitaha Snatva pitvavadi nadya Upasprishto gatashramaha Parishranta.
Being tired.
Indriya.
Bodily.
Atma.
Mentally.
Aham.
I.
Trit parita.
Being thirsty.
Bubukshitaha
and hungry.
Snatva
taking a bath.
Pitva
and drinking water also.
Ready
in the lake.
Nadya
of a river.
Upasprishta
being in contact with.
Gata.
Got relief from.
Shramaha.
Tiredness. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus traveling, I felt tired, both bodily and mentally, and I was both thirsty and hungry. So I took a bath in a river lake. And also drank water. By contacting water, I got relieved from my exhaustion. Purport. A traveling mendicant can meet the needs of body, namely thirst and hunger, by the gifts of nature, without being a beggar at the doors of the householders. The mendicant, therefore, does not go to the house of a householder to beg, but to enlighten him spiritually. Sri Narada is an eternal associate of Lord Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a perfect soul. But something happened. He was living as a Gandharva in the heavenly planets, and he committed aparadh by singing. Prabhupada says he was surrounded by women who were attracted by his singing, and during a Sankirtan festival, he was singing filmy bhajans, cinema songs. And the sages got mad at him and cursed him to take birth as a Shudra, for behaving like a Shudra. You behave like an animal, that's why you take birth as an animal. You behave like a Shudra, it's just the economy of nature. Why waste a Brahmin body on someone who's behaving like a Shudra? Let him take his next birth as a Shudra. So he took his birth. Now he's in a completely material situation. He's in a material body. Material bodies suffer thirst and hunger and fatigue. Even Narada, in his he'll get his spiritual body soon. He'll get his spiritual body back. But meanwhile, he's in a body subject to fatigue, hunger, and thirst. But he's Krishna conscious. By the association of the Bhaktivedantas and by his sadhana of hearing about Krishna and chanting the Krishna mantra, he's developed actual love of God. So, therefore he reacts, even though his body and mind are feeling fatigue and hunger and thirst, he reacts appropriately to them. Take a bath. That's a Vaishnava thing to do. Find a holy water, lake, river, bathe yourself, rest a little while, and then what? Meditate. This is the recreation of the saints. We don't read that Narada Muni, he was tired and fatigued and he decided to watch a few movies. No. His entertainment was spiritual, appropriate. Body needs recreation, body needs rest, but there are appropriate ways for a Brahmin, for a saint, to take care of his body. Not the body should be neglected, or the body should be tortured, or let to go to hell from neglect and misuse. The body should be taken care of because it's Krishna's property. It's not ours. You cannot renounce what doesn't belong to you. The body doesn't belong to you, especially if you're engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord. You've given it, your body, to him, and you must maintain it for him. So Narada taking care, but in an appropriate way. Narada is passing through various phases of spiritual development. Now he's on the Parivrajakacharya stage, acting like a traveling sannyasi. He will transcend even that. He's ultimately a Paramahamsa and an eternal personal associate of the Supreme Lord. But he's now acting on the level of Parivrajakacharya, traveling mendicant, and acting very appropriately. He's seeing the whole world. He's not doing much preaching yet. He hasn't been empowered to do that yet, but he's observing and traveling. Of course, our Parivrajakacharyas are not meant just to wander. To wander the cities of the world and just look in the windows and see what there are for what's for sale. No, that's not appropriate. It's not even appropriate for us in this Kali Yuga to take sannyas unless we're going to preach. Because otherwise sannyas is forbidden for Kali Yuga, according to the Dharma Shastras. How does it go? Ashwalambam gavalam, ashwamedam gavalambam. Sannyasam pitra. And we're offering of meat to the forefathers. Devarena sutotpati kalau panchavivarjaye. These five must be avoided in Kali Yuga. According to Dharma Shastra, one should not kill the horse or the cow in sacrifice. Those sacrifices are not allowed in Kali Yuga, although they were practiced in previous ages. Killing a cow, killing a horse in Vedic sacrifice. Kali Yuga, the only allowable animals to slaughter in sacrifice are lower animals like goats. If you have to offer, you won't offer, Vishnu will not accept, but you can offer to Kali. And Prabhupada explains she doesn't accept. She's a vegetarian. She gives the offering to the ghosts and spirits who follow her. She doesn't even take it for herself. But you can offer to Kali a goat. That's not forbidden if you want to behave on that level. But horse sacrifice, cow sacrifice is forbidden in Kali Yuga. And the offering of flesh in the Shraddha ceremony to your forefathers is forbidden, although it's traditional. The forefathers are Kravyadas. The demigods are Havyadas. They eat ghee. And the Pittas are Kravyadas. They eat flesh. And so traditionally flesh, in the form of a ball, meatball, was offered to the Pittas in the Shraddha ceremony. But in Kali Yuga that is forbidden. So instead of offering a cow, if you're going to perform the Gavalambam or a horse in the Ashwamedha or in other soma sacrifices, practically in every soma sacrifice there's some animal sacrifice, some animal offering. You substitute what is called purodasha, rice cake, basically idli. You offer that instead to represent the animal, but you don't kill the animal. At least you don't kill cows and horses in Kali Yuga. And you offer the same thing, the rice cake, not the dry rice cake, but like an idli. I don't know if it has dal in it. But they offer in the Shraddha, what's the ingredients? It's a regular idli. Okay, but you don't take the prasadam. It's been offered to the forefathers, considered Vaishnavas don't take that prasadam. Separate offer is made to the Brahmin, who's the first chief guest. But what's offered to the forefathers, you give to the cows or put in the lake. You offer that rice cake instead of offering flesh in Kali Yuga. There's another forbidden ritual called the Devaena Sutotpati, begetting a son by your brother-in-law. Not brother-in-law, by the younger brother. The older brother dies, leaving his wife a widow. The younger brother traditionally could impregnate the wife of the older brother. It's explained in the Manusmriti. But that's forbidden in Kali Yuga. And sannyasa is forbidden. The ordinary sannyasa of just wandering around and maybe doing some worship. We can take sannyas only for the purpose of preaching. We shouldn't even, if we're going to be a Paramahamsa, there's no need to take sannyas either. We have instead the Babaji Vesh, as done by Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. They didn't take sannyas because they were not preaching in the sense of traveling and preaching. They didn't become sannyasis, they just became Paramahamsas. Not wearing saffron, just wearing plain dress. But for sannyas is meant in Kali Yuga, in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is meant for the purpose of preaching. We can even say that the second initiation, getting the Gayatri Mantra, although it has its purpose in purifying us, Gayatri brings us to liberation. And only a liberated soul can properly engage in transcendental devotional service. So by chanting the Gayatri, we become fit to chant Hare Krishna and to serve Radha Krishna. We become liberated. That's one purpose of the Gayatri chanting and of the second initiation that gives you the Gayatri. But another purpose that's very important for us is preaching. Again, preaching. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave Brahma Gayatri Mantra to his disciples even if they weren't born in Brahmin families. And that is quite a radical thing to do. The other Vaishnavas, including most of the, you know, there are many different schools of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So you can find someone who does anything. Any deviation or any twist on the sadhana, you can find it. You can find an example of it. But generally, among the orthodox followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the tradition has been that the Brahma Gayatri Mantra was given only to those born in Brahmin families. The first Gayatri Mantra. The Gopal Mantra could be given to all the Vaishnavas when they complete the initiation. And the splitting up into first and second initiation, that was also an innovation of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But Gopal Mantra is given in initiation. But the Brahma Gayatri is only given to those born as Brahmins. Except that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati broke the rule and gave the Brahma Gayatri to all his second initiated disciples. He didn't give it to the women, did he? Prabhupada started that. Prabhupada also was not going to give the Gayatri Mantra to the women. But there were a couple of women, his disciples, who weren't happy about it, and they let everybody know about it. And therefore, Prabhupada relented and let them have the Gayatri. Anyway, that was Prabhupada's prerogative to give even the women the Gayatri Mantra. And Pancharatrik Mantra can be given to women. There's no, you know, it's allowed in the Pancharatrik system. But it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his purpose, as far as I understand it, in giving all his disciples the Brahminical mantra that only born Brahmins are supposed to have, is to tell the born Brahmins that we're just as good as you and better. That the initiated Vaishnavas are equal to and better than ordinary Brahmanas. Therefore, there's no reason why they shouldn't be allowed to have everything, all the privileges of the born Brahmins, including the Gayatri Mantra and the worship of the deity. The Vaishnav deserves everything, especially everything that a Brahmin gets. And Narada is foremost of our Vaishnavas. He's the founder of our Sampradaya after his father Brahma. Prabhupada put it this way, that we're standing on the shoulders of Narada. You know, he's the basis of our Sampradaya. And he's so prominent in the Bhagavatam. So many times Narada shows up, unannounced, just when he's needed, and gives proper guidance to someone who's misled. He initiates and gives instruction to so many disciples from all different ways of life, demigods and humans, and thieves and murderers, and everybody. And great saints, and great sons of kings like Dhruva, great brahmanas like Vyasadeva, all his disciples, so many disciples, that he gave instruction to, gave initiation to, and inspired and guided in the path of pure devotional service. And he's so prominent. He speaks so often in the Bhagavatam. He has so much to say. One of the most prominent speakers throughout the Bhagavatam is Narada Muni. So here we have, in these two chapters, and somewhere in the 8th canto, 9th canto, there's a story of when he was a Gandharva. This is the life story of Narada. It's the history of his sadhana, how he recovered his Krishna consciousness. Bhagavatam doesn't talk too much specifically about sadhana. Because the Bhagavatam is meant for all times. And sadhana, the specifics of devotional practice, varies according to time and place and sampradaya. So Bhagavatam cannot go too much into details about how to practice the sadhana of devotional service. Or it doesn't. It chooses not to. Case histories are given. Basic principles are given. But in the case of Narada, we have a detailed outline, step by step, of how he practiced Krishna consciousness and became perfect. fortunate for us. We have such a case history. Even though Narada actually is an eternal associate and doesn't need any sadhana. But he went through it and demonstrated it for our good. Now he's been wandering. He feels from all that walking, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of kilometers he's been walking. Walking, not taking a train or a bus. Walking, not flying. Later on, his spiritual body will be given to him and he can fly all over the universe, even without a reservation or a ticket. But now he has to walk. And he's done quite a bit of walking, and naturally he's tired, both mentally and physically. So he sits down at the base of a pipala tree. Pipala is one of the four kinds of banyan trees. There are four subspecies of sacred banyans: Ashwata, Nyagroda, Pipala, and one other. And this is one of the four. We have, you can see them on the Parikram Marg, they have a funny shaped leaf, Pipala. Yeah, like a tail. People tree, people in Hindi. It's a kind of banyan tree, and so Narada is sitting at the base of that tree, and he's been instructed, he was taught how to meditate, now he's going to try it out, what he was taught by his teachers. Not something to be done casually. You have to find the right place and the right and it's adequate time and a peaceful place, then you sit down and meditate. We are also meant for meditation. Meditation on the personality and the activities of Sri Radha Krishna. That will be the perfection of our life. But we do it at the right time and place. We should not try to do it prematurely. You can say the place is right nearby. We can go to Radha Kund or sit here at Govardhan and do Nirjana Bhajana, solitary worship. But you're not ready for it. I'm sorry. Some of us are not ready for it. I won't pretend to know exactly who's ready and who's not. But generally, hardly anybody in the world is ready for it without thorough training and preparation. Purification from all anartas. So you know whether you have anartas or not. And what kind of anartas. If you still have any sex desire, not yet. You're not ready yet to sit down and fully meditate on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. First deserve, then desire. Work now, samadhi later. But that is our goal. It is our goal. That should be the aim of the end of our life, that we sit down at a great holy place. This is good enough, Govardhan, or Radha Kund. So many of our great acharyas spent the last years of their life, in the case of Raghunath Das Goswami, the last 47 years of their life, sitting at Radha Kund, and left their bodies there. Not engaged in collecting a bank balance from Videshis or useless disciples, but simply in meditating on Radha and Krishna and serving them within the heart. So many of our great acharyas and other great devotees have done that. Others choose to worship here at Govardhan. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his father, Bhaktivinoda, had a house at Radha Kund. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told his disciples that I'm not qualified to live there. My father can live there, but I'm not fit. I'll stay at Govardhan. Bhaktisiddhanta would go once a year for 1 month and stay at Radha Kund. But he would not dare to stay longer than that. That was his personal feeling about himself, that better to stay at Govardhan since he didn't feel qualified to take up residence at Radha Kund. And that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is an eternal associate of Srimati Radharani. Narada Muni doesn't enter normally doesn't, at least in the same body, he doesn't enter Radhakund. He has his ashram 2 kilometers outside of Radhakund. Uddhava comes a little closer. He has his place in the bushes 1 kilometer outside of Radhakund. But the two of them don't dare to enter. The goddess of fortune is not allowed to enter the place of the rasa dance or Radhakund. So we shouldn't be so bold that just because it's only 4 kilometers away, we can dare to make that our residence when we're not ready for it. First become ready. Narada has become ready. He's perfected himself. He doesn't even have to go to any particular holy place. He's just in some unnamed forest. It doesn't say it's a sacred forest or any particular forest. He's just wandering around the world. And he sat down under a banyan tree. There are so many millions of banyan trees. Nothing special. And in his heart, he got the vision of Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan then talked to him. And soon he will be able to leave this material body and regain his spiritual identity, his spiritual body. Achieve perfection very easily. Then later he builds his ashram right outside of Radhakund. We have our ashram 4 kilometers away from Radhakund. It may be difficult to live here, but if you can do it, it's a very favorable place for developing actual attraction to Krishna. Okay, any questions or comments? Dharmadipuram. I'm sorry I didn't take up the whole time. I have to conserve my breathing energy. I have to give another class later. Yes, Dharmadipuram.
Are these births of Narada just his pastimes, Leela, and he's eternal associate, or he was a conditioned soul and then became perfect later? And
we should assume that. We should assume that Narada didn't actually fall down. He didn't undergo a fall down. Out of respect for him, we should assume that. And that it's all a pastime. Yes. Time it over.
In a sacrifice, for example, offering a goat to Kali or offering something to the Pitas, how do they actually eat? Like you say, that Kali doesn't eat the meat, she gives the meat to the ghosts.
And the ghosts eat it.
To the ghosts.
The ghosts eat it, and then.
So, how do they actually eat it? I mean.
How do ghosts eat?
Like for example, I never saw a sacrifice, but I must imagine that you cut the throat of the animal and then you see it bleeding and then you see it dying, but you don't see any ghosts coming eating, or don't see the forefathers eating, or like we accept Krishna.
Well,
as,
do you see Krishna eating right now?
No, but we understand.
So it's invisible.
But it says that he eats with his eyes by glancing upon it.
Okay, well, the ghosts have subtle bodies. They don't have gross bodies anyway that we can normally see. We usually don't see the bodies of ghosts. So, but they have some sort of faculty. Actually, ghosts have a problem. They normally, they see us eating and they'd like to have some too, but they don't have the facility to eat. They're just in subtle bodies. Anyway, somehow, the mechanism, I don't know, they get to, Goddess Kali gives it to them and gives them some arrangements how they can actually eat it.
And also, it says that the demigods, they feed themselves from sacrifices that the humans
Yeah,
give.
Demigods eat.
So
Agni carries the offering to the demigods and they eat it.
How,
but
like,
subtly. Krishna eats spiritually.
Like they get.
So, something in between. The demigods don't have spiritual bodies, but they have subtle bodies. So they don't have to cram the food down their mouth the way we do. I don't really know exactly what the procedure is, the mechanism is for the demigods, but they do it in a subtle way.
But they somehow get nourished by that.
Yeah.
But now in
that is their nourishment.
But like for example, now in Kali Yuga, I guess that's not their only nourishment, is it? Or
basically, it is.
But now in Kali Yuga, not much offerings or bonafide.
So we have to do Sankirtan Yagya.
And they get nourished.
That will nourish them spiritually. And we should offer some prasadam. And although it's for Krishna, demigods get also. They get the Mahaprasad.
So
that's the only way demigods eat, is by performance of Sankirtan that's accompanied by the offering of prasadam.
And we water the root and all the plants get nourished.
Yes.
So that's how we're doing
it. If that stops, then the demigods are going to get weak, and the universe will really get in, you know, be in trouble. If the performance of Sankirtan Yagya stops.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Then the demons will take over. Yes.
And I have a question.
Yes.
Related to the Sankirtan Yagya. Can we estimate, like, how many people are actually doing Sankirtan Yagya, like...
Or what exactly? How many people are chanting?
Yeah, or like what exactly is a bona fide Sankirtan Yagya, and how many people actually are doing? I don't know. Just
you can say anybody who's chanting on the instruction of Prabhupada and his followers is engaged properly in Sankirtan Yagya, and then there are other teachers in other schools, other branches of the Chaitanya Sampradaya. They're also spreading Sankirtan according to their capacity. Some of them are deviant, so the Sankirtan is deviant. But some of them are orthodox. Some of them are half orthodox, half deviant. So you have different versions of Sankirtan, but it is going on, even outside of ISKCON.
Well, it's really a minority. Like,
yes?
It's really a minority.
Well, a minority of all the living entities.
Of all the
there
human
are six,
beings.
6.5 billion human beings, and there's many more other species of life, many more members of the other species of life. There's trillions of microbes on the tip of my finger.
Yeah.
So if you count them, and it's a real small minority. If you just count the human beings...
Amongst humans, yeah.
I don't know. 500,000 are chanting Hare Krishna? How many? Probably less than 1 million. Well, I mean, if you count, that's under the auspices of ISKCON, maybe 500,000 people. But there's others. There's many Vaishnavas in India, and many of them chant Krishna's name some of the time. So you can count it, you know, several million more, 100 million, 150 million more. So let's say there's 150 million people chanting Krishna's names under some sort of orthodox process. 150 million out of 6.5 billion. You figure out the percentage.
And these 150 million are we can say in one sense... sustaining the universe?
Yeah. Even if there's only 10 people doing it, that's what will keep the universe going.
Thank you.
It's quality, not just quantity. One person doing it purely can sustain the universe.
You explained that the pitas eat the flesh during the Shraddha ceremony, but the pitas eat the flesh during the Shraddha ceremony when it is offered to them. But they are supposed to be the Brahmanas who had gone to the Pitruloka. So how can the Brahmanas eat meat?
When you take a pitta body, you become a non-vegetarian. You know, you go to a place, just like a Brahman can die and take birth in New Jersey, where they aren't vegetarians. So Brahman dies and takes birth on Pitruloka, where everybody eats meat. And he doesn't know any different. He just got born as a Pitra. And he also eats meat, because they eat meat up there.
Is it considered a higher birth than the human birth, or?
Well, technically, it's because pitras live in the Bhuvar Loka system. It's, you know, it's higher than the earth. But I wouldn't say it's better. Better to be a human being. Better to be a human being and engage directly in Lord Chaitanya's movement. Lord Chaitanya is going to, you know, wants people to give up their sinful activities. So the pitras can be engaged in some kirtan, but it's a little irregular because they're non-vegetarians. Better be a vegetarian and offer all your food to Krishna. How are they going to offer everything to Krishna if they're eating meat? They're eating things that aren't offered to Krishna then, because Krishna's not going to take the meat. So the problem practicing proper devotional service if you're a non-vegetarian, because Krishna won't accept what you eat. And you're eating things that you haven't offered to Krishna.
In some places in Bhagavatam, we see that different demigods are offering prayers to the Lord. Like when the Krishna was in the womb of Devaki, so all the demigods, even pitas, sometimes they offer prayers.
And Krishna accepts.
That means they are like...
Krishna allows, accepts service from meat eaters too. That's his prerogative. He can. But it's not our system. Our system is strictly vegetarian. Even though Garuda is not a vegetarian. So does he offer... Garuda! He eats turtles and elephants. Do you think he offers the turtles and elephants to Narayan before he eats them? Can't. Can't offer it to Narayan. So he's eating non-prasadam, but he's a bird. What do you expect? But he's Garuda still, and he's a great devotee of Narayan. Narayan excuses him for it.
I told because the Pitas are directly, along with demigods, they are seeing the Lord and they are appreciating the pastimes and glorifying directly. They are getting darshan of Lord. So in that sense, they are higher than...
They have close relationships. There are meat eaters who are dear to Krishna. But that's not our normal standard. We're sadhakas. Krishna will accept people who don't follow any regular principles as dear to him. Some of the Vrijabhasis don't follow any regular principles. Here in Govardhan, people are generally vegetarians. But go other places in Vraja, they're not, it's not all strict veg. Not in Mathura. Mathura city is full of meat eaters. But they're dear to Krishna. That's Krishna's choice. But we have a different standard. We're practicing in the line, in a line coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our acharyas, who teach strict sadhana as the way of satisfying Krishna. But someone who is dear to Krishna already, Krishna can excuse him from all sorts of bad habits. Yes, sir.
In the fifth canto, there's a description of the hellish planets in the abode of Yamaraj, and they said the Priti Loka is right beside.
Okay. That means below the earth.
But I thought there was a concept. Either it says somewhere else, or there was confusion that it was also... But which? it says also, like, the planet of Yama, you remember? It says also the planet... Like beside Yamaloka, it was Priti Loka, or the Aryama, the place of Aryama. It was confusing because it seems that it was in two places. I don't know if you...
Okay, I don't know how to resolve it without looking at it closer.
Aryama place, that is like an official place where the Pisas work in some kind of administration.
They commute?
Yeah, they work. It is their job, workplace, something like that.
Maybe they go down to hell to go to work. We know people who do that. They commute to hell, to the city, and they live in the suburbs, and they go to work in the city.
You're staying at Radhakund, and so what is the real mood of Bhakti Siddhanta? Actually, he does not...
Well, yes.
But he does not want to stay in Radhakund, or he does not, like you told, he does not feed himself to stay at Radhakund for doing bhajan.
But he said that to his disciples. He's not revealing his deep inner heart. He's making a public stance. He chooses not to tell what's going on deep inside. He doesn't talk about that. Acharya doesn't always reveal the inner depths of his heart. His business is to train up his disciples and tell them what they need to hear. And other things he keeps private in his heart. And then the disciples should not speculate. If they speculate what's going on deep in the guru's heart, that's actually aparad to do that speculation. If he tells them, okay. But if he chooses not to tell what his private life is, his deep meditation... then the disciples should be satisfied and not speculate about it. So I don't know what is the real attitude of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. We know that he's, eternal servant of Srimati Radharani. So that the mood of the close associate of Srimati Radharani, that's his mood.
So like all the instructions to us are coming through him. So how should we follow him? How should we follow him?
Well, we should understand from him saying that he thinks he's not fit to live in Radhakund, that we shouldn't be over-eager to run to Radhakund. That's the purpose of telling us that is don't think so cheaply that you can just run to Radhakund. You know, you may aim for it, but you have to prepare yourself properly. We can take that message from it. Don't be cheap about engaging in very intimate service of Krishna. You can hope for that as your goal, but you have to become fully qualified to enter into that confidential service. So the Acharya tells us, I'm not fit. And the disciples should think, well, if he's not fit, then I'm not fit, certainly. But you can try to become fit, but not cheaply and easily.
Thank you. Okay. Another question is...
Yes.
In Odisha, some devotees are preaching, and also to whom they are preaching, they are also chanting continuously 3-4 days, like Japa Jagya they are doing. Japa Jagya.
Yes.
So chandni sacrifice. So is it practicable for preaching in that way, like this? To
have Japa Yagya?
Yeah, like continuously they are chanting for 3-4
days. They are chanting, or are they getting other people to chant?
No, also they are telling other people to chant.
So they get people to participate. Yeah, everybody's chanting. Sounds okay to me. Lots of chanting. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, by hook or crook, get people to chant. Make a yagya out of it. That is the yagya. Yagya sankirtana prayayar. The appropriate yagya for Kali Yuga is sankirtan. So tell people we're going to have a big yagya and then get them to chant Hare Krishna. That's perfectly appropriate. No? If you get them to chant, you know, Gayatri mantra or some other, you know, other thing, that may be questionable, but chant Hare Krishna is fine. Either on japa beads or out loud, everybody together, either way. I don't see what's wrong with that.
Thank you.
Sure. You know, you can tell them we're going to chant and, you know, make the rain come, but at least you're getting in the chant. Yeah. Okay, so I'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.